This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Righto, it's 1:05. Strap yourself in. We have a very big show for you. Food, glorious food. The gorgeous Perry Stragan is sitting in front of me, bursting at the seams, waiting to talk. We'll talk to Sean Preslin from Saki. And we're going to chat to Angie Bradbury. She's a very well-known woman and very, very fabulous. Stay tuned. Of course we're talking cravings because it is 1:05 on a Saturday afternoon. Hello. It's not a day to be outside, folks. It's gloomy and miserable and a little blowy and a little cold. But this is Melbourne in spring, something that should be expected. Hello, Pete Dillon with you right through now until 2 o'clock before we are joined by the fellows from Fender Benders. Going to be talking all about motor vehicles again as they do and playing some ordinarily cheesy music. So I wouldn't expect anything less from Tim and the boys. Thank you to Jody and Greg. Another interesting program on Detours talking about Tourism Victoria and all that it does. They are great supporters of our community and likewise we of theirs. And thank you to my little buddy Matty T for the news. He does such a sterling job on the gayest station in the nation. All I'm waiting to see him do one day is to put one hand on a headphone as he announces that and drop his voice about an octave. I'm sure we'll be all licking ourselves off the window. So thank you, Matty. We have a big show ahead of us. We're going to be talking with a couple of chefs. One you may know quite well, one you may not. But by the end of this show, you will know him intimately. His name is Perry Stragan. He is the chef now at the Graham Hotel, which has a wonderful reputation right here in Melbourne as a gastropub put together by a couple of twin brothers. Well, not a couple, put together by twin brothers, because if there are a couple of twins, there'd probably be four of them. Perry, welcome.
Thank you, Pete.
Good to have you in.
Yeah, it's nice to be in.
Let's cut to the chase. We'll talk about this first because we'll sort of explore your history in a little while. But you've moved from taxi and prior to that you were at Circa. You've been under the Lambie umbrella, as it were, for some years. How nice is it to be out on your own and I guess heading up your own kitchen?
Oh, look, it's quite liberating, really, to be out on my own. You know, after 8 years at taxi and 4.5 years at Circa.
8 years at taxi?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Mm. Yeah. It doesn't feel that long, though. Maybe towards the end, the last couple of weeks were a bit long, but that's all right.
But chefs are normally quite, I won't say flippant, but there is sort of constant movement in and around
yeah,
the industry. And
yeah.
As we were talking just before we came on here, I guess that's a benefit to you as a chef working at somewhere like taxi for 8 years where a constant stream of not a constant stream, but new people coming in.
That's
right. They bring skills to you and ideas. Talk me through that process. Like, how do you start to pick up from people who perhaps might be younger or less experienced?
Look, I think that every restaurant and every chef has their own little a few techniques that you know you may have up your sleeve or a couple of tricks up your sleeve that you know, the only way you're going to learn it is to actually work in their restaurant or take it from an apprentice that's worked in the restaurant. You know, there's a few apprentices that I've worked with that, you know, I've taken a few techniques from that they've used in their previous places of employment. And, yeah, it's all just about gathering information and gathering skills and
And that ideas.
Was, yeah, and ideas, exactly.
There's no such thing as an original idea with food, is there?
No, I don't think so. No, it's just you can't really reinvent the wheel. It's just about putting some new mags on it, really.
Although there are there are folks that I think do a fairly significant job of taking old ideas and refreshing them with a completely different twist. People like Ben Shuri at Attica, for example, who is, I think, one of the most exciting chefs we have in this country.
Yeah, most definitely.
Also along with Dan Hunter, who's at the Royal Mail Hotel in Dunkeld. Dan's, I think, an incredible chef with the way he thinks. And a guy we spoke to last week, Michael Ryan, who's the Age Good Food Guide Chef of the Year this year.
That's
from
right,
Provenance up in the High Country in Beechworth. Again, somebody who's his background is as a scientist before he was a chef. So
yeah, of course.
There's very much a scientific process to, I guess, the way that he creates ideas as compared to some of the more creative chefs who come from a creative background where there's those light bulb moments.
Yeah, for sure. If
you had to define a signature style that you have now that you've been able to bring to the Graham, what would that be?
I think that my signature style would be mostly French technique, techniques of cooking, but a lot of, I guess, diversity in flavors, and use a lot of Asian, a lot of Japanese flavors, a lot of Thai flavors in my food.
From working at Taxi?
Yeah,
for
most
eight years?
Definitely. Mm. Yeah, working alongside some sushi chefs at Taxi for 8 years, I kind of picked up quite a few tips and. You know, instead of using some salt, you use some soy, or you might use some miso,
or an anchovy.
Or instead of using basil, you can use, there's a whole bunch of things that you can replace. You know, yuzu instead of lemon juice, and
I love yuzu.
Yeah, it's delicious.
What's one of the hard things about going from that very safe environment where you are surrounded by an extraordinary team of peers? To then go to somewhere like the Graham where all of a sudden you're in charge, you're developing menus, it's your ideas, it's like you've gone from being on the interchange bench to the captain of the football team.
Yeah, that's right. Well, first of all, there's nowhere to hide.
Which is probably a good thing.
That's right. Yeah, and it puts you out there and out of your comfort zone. But I think, I was kind of silly enough to walk into the Graham on my own without any other support. And I mean, that's sort of something that I was quite comfortable with, being at Taxi for 8 years. I had a lot of support around me and a big network of chefs that I'd worked with for a long time that understood
and
the way that
I worked. And you didn't poach any of them to go with you?
No. Tony Twitchett's a good friend of mine. So
Tony Twitch is a good friend of many people. He's a good guy. We love Twitch. He's a good man. Heading off to Port Douglas tomorrow, I think. So,
is he?
If you're listening, Twitch, have a nice holiday, buddy. we'll be thinking of you down here in the cold and the wet. If you'd like to talk to Perry, if you'd like to ask him a question, please send us a message. 0427JOY949. That is the SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300JOY949 and speak to Callum. He does look like he's a little bit bored out there, so give him a call. Hassle him up a bit. And you can also send a tweet to cravings_joy949. If you have the iPhone or you have an Android phone, you can download the app. Just go to joy.org.au, click on the link for the app, download it, and then you can contact us directly right from your iPhone. Just press the contact button and it'll come straight in here. So a great many ways you can contact us if you have questions about anything we talk about on today's show, or indeed if you have suggestions for another program, please do be in touch. 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. It is 13 minutes past 1. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Joy 94.9, 14 minutes past 1. Pete Dillon with you, taking you through until 2 o'clock here with Cravings, where we talk all things Tucker and Tipples and Tucker, as David McCarthy likes to call it. My guest in the studio first up is Perry Shagan. I'm just going to call you Perry now, Chef Perry from now on, because, I have a really bad habit of changing people's names without their knowledge or indeed their permission. So, yes. Now, you were born in Holland.
Yes, correct.
And arrived here at what age?
6 years old.
Right.
Yep.
To Perth.
Yeah, my grandparents grew up, my grandparents spent time in Indonesia. They're Dutch, obviously. It was a Dutch colony at the time.
It was the British East Indies.
Yeah, something like that. So then
Dutch East Indies, something.
Dutch East Indies.
Something like that.
Yeah, so they moved to Perth, and that's where my father's originally from Perth. Mm-hmm. He grew up in Perth, but then, well, he was born in Perth and then moved to Holland. And yeah, so naturally we moved to Perth to start off with, and I grew up there, and then moved to Melbourne to
pursue your food.
Yeah,
journey.
Exactly. That's right.
What kicked in you? When was that? When did that switch go off to give you a hint that you had a desire to work in this industry?
It was probably, I think, when I was quite young, actually. My grandparents used to take us out to restaurants for special occasions like Christmas, birthdays, all the rest of it.
And what sort of restaurants were they?
A lot of buffets, you know, nothing too fancy.
The cheap and cheerful Chinese with some sweet and sour pork and fried rice.
Yeah, we used to go out to, you know, a couple of wineries in the Swan Valley and have some Christmas lunches there and buffets. And I was just fascinated. I was amazed at how it all worked. I was just fascinated at the experience, and we didn't do it very often, so I guess it sort of heightened it for me as well. That's sort of, I think, where I could probably pinpoint where I started to think, right, I want to be part of this industry. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So you started an apprenticeship at 15 in Perth?
Yes.
And then you qualified at 19. You were in Fremantle at Quattro?
Yeah, a place called Quattro, which is a bistro which was sort of modelled on a restaurant called Craglino's, which was in London. Mm-hmm. There was a sister restaurant in Northbridge, I think it is.
Is that you vibrating, by the way?
Yeah,
you?
I think so. I think that's my partner, Sarah.
Pop it in your pocket. Hello, Sarah. He's doing a very good job, but he's about to get told off for his phone vibrating on my desk. So you then went on to Cairns and got some experience in international hotels.
Yep, that's right. So I moved to Cairns for about a year and a half. I just sort of took a little bit of a break and had a look around.
Hard place to live.
Yeah, yeah. No, beautiful one day, perfect the next, they say. But so I did a bit of hotel work. It just gave me time to reflect and decide what I'm actually going to do with my career. And Melbourne was the food capital, arguably.
And always shall be the food capital in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. It is. I will defend Melbourne as the food capital.
Yeah, they're trying to take it, aren't they?
And then you discovered Michael Lambie.
Yes.
Or he discovered you.
No, I discovered him, yeah. Yep.
Did you stalk him for a job?
I did, yeah. A friend of mine at the time was working at Circa, and I'd heard a lot about Michael Lambie in the past. I guess when I was in Perth and when I was in Cairns, I used to subscribe to the Gourmet Traveller, as I do now. And then, they're always featuring in there, and I really wanted to take that next step up and become a serious chef, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. And a fairly impressive alumni has come out of that kitchen.
Yeah, exactly.
If we were to look at some of the most important chefs in the Melbourne culinary scene. Saturday Magazine spoke a little while ago this morning to Matt Wilkinson, who's a regular friend of ours on this program, who was at Circa for a number of years. Mm. You mentioned Twitch, Tony Twitch, and he was also at Circa. I think he worked with you at Circa.
Yeah, Tony and I worked together and moved to Taxi together.
And so there's a fairly impressive lineup that's come out of there. I guess there's probably a silly question. To what do you attribute Lambie's success, do you think?
That's a tough one, I guess.
I'll let you think about that one.
Yeah.
Because I do want to talk about the Graham. It is, as many Melburnians would know, a little beacon in Graham Street in Port Melbourne.
Right.
It's always had a reputation for being a stylish place to go and eat.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I actually think Michael Lambie's success, he worked really hard to get where he is.
Yep.
He worked for Marco Pierre White, which everyone probably knows of. Mm.
The man that advertises the stock on television. Blur. Another one that sold out.
Exactly. Mm. So he worked really hard. He moved to Australia. He moved here at the right time, I think, as well. There's a million and one good chefs around, but I think that part of being a good chef is not just about being able to cook good food these days.
What is the secret then?
Well, it's about being rounded, I believe. Being able to promote your business, being able to please the public, as well as doing what you want to do and keep your passion going, I guess, without...
How much of a whore a media whore do you have to be? How willing must you be to, and I ask this question generally, how willing must you be to, I guess, sell your soul that little bit to market a venue that you work for?
It depends
for?
what you're selling, I guess, and it depends
your
about
soul.
What you're trying to promote, I guess, you know, if you have got a fine dining restaurant, you know, you wouldn't want to promote stock cubes, for instance.
No, but then people have.
But then
Marco
people have.
Pierre White,
yeah,
case
yeah.
in point.
But I think there's probably a time in a professional chef's life where you know, you're not after the accolades anymore, and then you're looking down at retirement, and you'll do anything to
Jesus. Settle down. You're in your 30s, man. Hold the bus. We do have an SMS. Thank you, Sandra. She has asked, can you ask Perry what his death row meal would be?
My death row meal?
Yeah, you know, that sort of last
yeah,
supper.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely.
Good question. Thank you, Sandra.
Roast chicken.
Roast chicken.
Yeah, I'm very simple when it comes to feeding myself.
What's your secret for the perfect roast chook?
Plenty of butter under the skin,
yeah.
Tarragon.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's it, really.
My other half is a chef and a very talented one at that. And he, I've learned something from him. He takes a lemon, whole lemon.
Yep.
Just run a little slice, sort of run a little knife around it, score the lemon a bit and throw that up
the
guts
cavity,
of the chook
yeah,
with some sprigs of herb and then the butter under the skin. It makes a remarkable difference to the way a chicken tastes. So I'm now stealing that idea and using it myself. But a roast chook, that's...
Yeah.
Because there's
was there something else you were expecting? Or?
Yeah, there was, but I'll come back to this question a little later because it's a question that I ask... I think every chef that comes in here, you know, Rove used to have questions that he would ask everyone.
Yep.
I've got one question which we'll come back to in a little bit after we finish talking about the Graham, because it's it was a two-headed restaurant under Andrew Blake for Andrew Blake was at Blake's, obviously, with the guys that own it, who are twins Tony and Peter Giannakis. What are they like to work for? Are they fun?
They're quite inspiring to work for, really. Yeah, you know, they work really hard. They're committed. They are...
Fairly energetic fellows, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Very energetic. Yeah, just inspiring. I mean, they're the hardest working guys in the restaurant, I believe. You know, they're there before I get there in the morning. They're there after I leave. Yeah, they're just passionate guys. Very passionate about the industry, passionate about service, passionate about food.
And they've built this business for 11 years, putting their stamp on
right.
the Graham.
Yep.
And again, there has been a fair amount of chefs through there that have tried to I guess make their point. And if we're having a look at what you've done now, I think they've hit on a really good recipe to with your vision for food and their energy and their love of food as well. I think it's a fairly good recipe. What's going to be the hard thing for you, do you think?
The hard thing? I think, you know, it's just it's a lot more competitive than, I guess, say 10 years ago, the industry. You know, there's new restaurants opening every single day, so it's...
As there are restaurants closing every single
day. Well, yeah, no, that's right. But, I mean, trying to steal a little bit of the limelight and I guess keep business flowing and consistent is the hardest thing, really, yeah.
And I guess we've seen this year some fairly big casualties in the industry, mostly north of the border, thankfully. The likes of Tony Bilson and obviously Justin North and his empire that's now disappeared.
Yeah.
And he'll maintain his celebrity status, of course. But that's got to sort of make you guys who are stalwarts of the industry sort of sit back and go, you know, how do we keep this fresh? How do we make sure that doesn't happen to us?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I don't know exactly what happened with those guys up north.
Overcapitalized?
Yeah, maybe overcapitalized. That's kind of what I think might have happened. And, you know, I think that you really need to work in your business and you need to work on your business constantly, non-stop. You know, the moment you walk away... Things
to fulfill your television and other media commitments.
I believe that's when things start to turn a little bit.
How do you, because there's a term that is bandied about this industry that I detest with a passion, that is celebrity chef, because I don't think that the two should go hand in hand. Food media personality I'm happy to work with, but celebrity chef sort of really gets on my tits a little bit. How do you guys, as you know, the guys that are putting in 12, 14 hours a day, 5 and 6 days a week, how do you look at your peers who are these alleged celebrity chefs, and what's the opinion? Because ultimately you see them doing things that, you know, advertising Norska deodorant on the television, for example. How does that sort of... Does it make you annoyed? Do you just sort of look at them and think you're a sellout? Don't put yourself in the shit, by the way.
No. I was thinking, how am I going to say this? Look, it's sometimes a little frustrating. I think, you know, you work. Sometimes I think a lot of chefs will get it that you're working in the kitchen 14, 15 hour days, and sometimes you wonder, why am I doing it? No, I don't get the recognition or the. But
doesn't that come from inside?
Well,
or shouldn't that come from inside?
Yeah. And I think it's all about, you know, trying to keep a healthy business and trying to, like I was saying before, steal a bit of the limelight and stay up there to be noticed. And then, sorry, can you repeat the question again? I kind of got lost.
Oh, no, it's just as you sit there and you see these alleged celebrity chefs advertising, you know, Marco Pierre White advertising stock, Matt Preston, who's not a celebrity chef, and I'll probably take him out of the equation, but, you know, he's all of a sudden doing paper towels. You've got another celebrity chef who's advertising Norska deodorant. You know,
I think there's many, many paths you can take as well as a professional chef. And, you know, it's not just you can choose to either spend your time cooking in a small restaurant and just doing really good food and pleasing your local customers, or you can choose to become more of a TV icon. And I mean, I guess there's so many more opportunities these days for a chef career-wise
than there were when we were younger. Look, it's almost 27 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Perry Shagan is my guest. Pearls of wisdom that are dripping from his mouth quite quickly. We're going to have some messages and we'll then have a bit of a track. I'm a bit mad for the new Scissor Sisters album, so we'll play Only the Horses after these messages here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It is 27 minutes past one.
Joy 94.9.
It is Joy 94.9. And look, you may well be listening on your toilet. I know that there are some people listening on their iPad, which is good fun. Now, that was the Scissor Sisters from their new album, Magic Hour. I know Callum's sitting out there going, is this the Scissor Sisters? I clearly don't know them as much as I thought I did. New album called Magic Hour, and that was called Only the Horses. A good fun track. And, you know, I like a bit of... nice bit of music on the show, as much as I do love nice people on the show. Perry Shagan is in the studio with me. He is the exec chef at Port Melbourne's Graham Hotel and doing a sterling job. Some very, very delicious food. We'll come back to some of your signature dishes in a minute, but we do have to get to our next guest. He is a man who graduated from university with a business degree before chuffing off to Japan to, you know, get amongst the culture, I guess, and... well, look, he can tell the rest of the story. His name is Sean Preslin. You may know him from programs such as MasterChef. Sean, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. Congratulations on the opening of Saki here in Melbourne.
Yeah, thank you very much. Gorgeous down there. Absolutely gorgeous.
Well, it's Perry and I were talking before. It is the food capital of Australia, regardless of what anybody north of the Murray will say to you. How's it started? I mean, it's been a couple of weeks now.
It's been 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks last Tuesday.
And is it doing your head in?
No, it's doing really well. It was initially doing my head in. God, we had, you know, obviously there's months and months and months of planning, and then boom, you get to an empty shell, and you've got to put plates on the shelves and put food in the ovens and start cooking.
Well, how much food goes in the oven? Because you work mostly with raw fish.
Not much. We don't even think the fondant goes in the oven.
Well, let's talk about. I did mention just in that intro that you leave university with a business degree tucked under your arm and went off to Japan. As I asked Perry earlier in the show, when was that switch flicked for you that all of a sudden you said, I have to do this, I have to work with food?
I studied a hotel management degree at uni, and I did Army Reserve. I got my chef trade papers at the same time. So after 4 years, I had the choice, do I wear a suit or do I, you know, get with the real workers?
Or do I put a bandana around my head and get a shot?
I went down the Gold Coast and asked to be a food and beverage manager, and they said, oh, what experience do you have? And I said, well, I've got a degree. Hello, I'm just in university. And they said, no, you can be a waiter. You can be a waiter. So I thought, look, I'll go to Japan. Because this was 20 years ago. The Gold Coast was massive with Japanese tourism.
So where did you go in Japan? Because we wouldn't have been – I was over there probably – 1993, so about 20 years ago as well.
Yeah, I went to Yamagata.
Nice.
It's in the middle of nowhere, right in the middle of Honshu, in the main island.
Yeah, I wasn't far away. I was in Nagano.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was, like, back then, no internet, no mobile phones. I was in a town of 160 people. It was living and working in a ryokan,
like
a traditional inn. And it was then the switch turned on. I just thought, wow, this is like food I've never seen. This is an amazing culture. This is just mind-blowing. I want to do this for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. So there was the switch.
Yeah, it was then. It was like cutting a piece of tuna as sashimi. I had to wait a year before I was allowed to even, you know, touch the fish.
So it's an incredibly long process to become a... Do you call yourself a sashimi master? What's your actual title?
Sushi chef.
Sushi chef. Now, yeah. is it 8 years or something like that to become a sushi chef?
It's about seven. I did 2 years in Japan, 2.5 years in Japan, and 5 years at Unkai under a renowned sushi chef. And it was like after 7 years, I could confidently...
You're allowed to touch the salmon.
Yeah. Go out and open a restaurant for myself.
Now, there's very few like you in Australia who are, you know, nice white round-eyed boys from Queensland who are now can call themselves a qualified sushi chef. Is it an interesting thing to sort of to have that mantle as somebody who's not Japanese?
Yeah, I think it hits home a bit more now after doing it for so long.
Mm.
You realise there aren't that many other people around doing this, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
Mm.
I think it's the coolest job in the world. You get to, you know, working on the sushi, you get to have an idea, look down at what you've got, freestyle, sort of make something, give it to your designer, and within 2 minutes, you get an instant reaction from them, and that's what the buzz is.
Mm. And the comparisons are obviously going to be made now that you're in Melbourne. Comparisons are going to be made to other venues that already exist here because you are on a fairly elite level. You know, this ain't sushi train that you're running. You're on a fairly elite level when it comes to the style of food that you're presenting at Saki over here at Hema Hall.
Yep.
How will you manage those comparisons to perhaps somebody like Nobu?
Oh, look, it's all about the team. I mean, I can't, obviously, we've got 3 sakis now, one in Brisbane, one in Sydney, and one in Melbourne. So it's about the team and making sure they're at a level where you're satisfied with the food. So it's managing 3 restaurants and 3 teams of very, very talented chefs and just hoping, like hell, they do what you ask. Every day, day in, day out.
Now, look, we were having a discussion before, and I'm going to bring Perry back into this discussion. Perry Shagan's in the studio with me. We were talking about celebrity chefs, and I've had a text message that I just want to read, and I then want to come and talk to you briefly about this term, because I find this term offensive. From somebody I know saying, hi, love. Listening to the show, my thoughts on celeb chefs is that while it's trendy for real foodies to bag the trend from Marco Pierre White to Jamie Oliver to Adriano Zumbo, they have at some stage inspired people to cook more at home and appreciate good food.
Yeah.
When they shop or when they go out, they might be out of the box, but the result is good. That's what I reckon. And I think that's a really interesting take on the discussion Perry and I were having. I don't care for the term celebrity chef because I don't think the two meld together.
Neither do I. I mean, I'm a chef and I haven't changed. People's perception of you change. And you're still the chef. You're still doing what you do.
You're still plating food and putting it down in front of a customer at the end of the day.
Exactly. And like Perry said before, you're still working ridiculous hours.
Mm.
Some days you're in there thinking, why am I here? What am I doing? I'd rather be out somewhere else.
out in Watson's Bay having a nice lunch. What do you think, and I hate to harp on this, but you're somebody, you've done a couple of hits on MasterChef and scared the bejesus out of some young folk on there. What do you think, or how do you think this term sits as far as you're now, in some senses, a public property? Does that allow you or has allowed the public to create some sort of judgment of what you do because they feel they know you?
Oh, without a doubt. People are always, you know, very easy to judge because they do think they know you. But
they can bugger off.
At the end of the day, the only person who knows you is yourself.
Yeah.
The only person you're going to spend the rest of your life with is yourself. So if you can, you know, have some integrity about what you do and what you say and that's represented on your plate, I think they can say whatever they like.
And I think that's an incredible life lesson that we all could take away in any career that we have.
Yeah. I remember 20 years ago, Tetsuya wasn't allowed to go to McDonald's or couldn't be seen in McDonald's. And that's, I thought that was hilarious. And then now I get it.
Because if somebody sees you in McDonald's, this is why they invented the drive-thru, I'm sure. A question I want to ask you both, because I sort of gave Perry a bit of a hint before. Somebody asked what would Perry's death row meal be, and he said it'd be a roast chook. What's your secret shame? You guys work really long hours. You go home. It's late at night. Surely you don't want to get out a couple of lamb cutlets and cook those up and steam vegetables and all of that. What is your secret shame? What is that thing you go home and make for yourself that you know is wrong, that you know is probably not good for you, but you do anyway?
Cheese on toast and baked beans. I mean, yeah, it doesn't get any simpler or more warming.
No, yeah, cheese on toast or a toasted cheese sandwich is incredibly popular. It's, I think, probably the most popular answer we've had. Baked beans I love as well. To open a tin of baked beans, I think
it's in the microwave, perfect. And chili sauce, you can sex it up. Chili sauce, bit more cheese through it.
Bit of prosciutto.
Yeah, gourmet.
Yeah, Perry, what's yours?
Hi, Sean. How are you going? mine would have to be the mee-goreng noodles with a fried egg.
So the two-minute
noodles, yeah.
And do you use the little flavour sachets as well, or do you flavour them up yourself?
Yeah, no, I use the flavour sachets, the whole lot.
Love it.
They're great.
Pour the noodles up, toss them in a pan with a bit of butter and use half the flavour sachet. They got buttery, salty noodles.
Oh, yeah, nice tip.
I don't use the sachets. I just cook the noodles themselves, and I do toss them in butter, put some parmesan cheese on them.
Oh, parmesan cheese.
Yeah, fancy, I know.
Ooh, really? Ooh, la la.
And eat them. Mate, what's the hardest thing about transferring a restaurant that is known in somewhere like Sydney and then taking it to Brisbane and bringing it to Melbourne? What's the difficult thing about, I guess, transplanting something that's well known to another city where, that probably goes on my judgmental question before, where people might want to judge? What's been the hardest thing about bringing sake to Melbourne?
The hardest thing is exactly that, not expecting to be able to cut and paste it. It's a different demographic, it's different people, it's different lifestyle. And you can't expect, say, it works in Sydney, this exact same thing is going to work here. You just have to be flexible. You have to be really flexible and listen to what people are talking about, listen to what they want. You know, especially at Hum Hall, we've got a lot of pre-theatre, a lot of post-theatre. So in some respects, you know, bang, it's got to be fast at the beginning and then it slows down for a middle service. It's listening to the market, I think.
And what have you found that's particular to Melbourne that you haven't? I mean, it's been 2 weeks for heaven's sake, but that's different to what you do in Sydney.
What's different food wise is you guys have got amazing fish down here. I guess colder waters and you're closer to Tasmania, but just the quality of the fresh seafood is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Perry, what do you reckon would be difficult?
I was actually going to ask you, how do you find finding sushi chefs in general? It seems like it's a highly skilled area. Do you do a lot of in-house training with a lot of non-sushi chefs?
There's a lot of good Koreans I've got in Sydney.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of good Japanese. Down in Melbourne, I came down, I was doing sushi for opening. I poached a very, very good chef who starts on Monday from a reputable Japanese restaurant.
Oh, so nice.
Yeah.
we love a good poach. Sean, I've got to let you go, buddy, because I've just got to jump into another interview and I've also got to play some messages. Promise me next time you're in Melbourne, you're going to come and sit in the studio and we'll finish this chat.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Excellent. And people can find you over there at Hamer Hall. Go and check out Sake. It is a fairly phenomenal restaurant and Sean, a very talented chef. Good to talk to you, mate.
See you, Sean.
Thank you. Cheers,
Barry. Cheers, bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Catch all your favourite Joy friends this weekend. Joy 94.9.
It is 14 minutes to 2 here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Perry, this hour is just flying by us at a rate of knots, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it?
It's 16 degrees here in Melbourne. Apparently there's 80% chance of rain, 1 to 2 millimetres this afternoon. So if you are going out, you may need to take an umbrella. If you're in Mount Dandenong, it's going to be 10 degrees. Take a coat as well. I thought it was a reasonably good day, but, you know. I know what will be a reasonably good day. Friday, 26th of October, got a little event happening here in Melbourne, and it's all for Wine Communicators Australia. To talk about it is the National President of Wine Communicators Australia. Her name is Angie Bradbury. Hi, love.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm very well, and you?
I'm great, thank you.
Now, do you know Perry from Perry Shagan? He's the chef at the Graham, formerly at Taxi.
Hello, hi.
I don't think we have met. I'm
no,
well.
I don't
How
think. Yeah, great, thank you.
See, I facilitate introductions on this program. My work is almost done. Angie, let's talk about this because this is the Royal Melbourne Wine Show event. So people can go and sit down at a lovely lunch and taste all the winning wines from the Royal Melbourne Wine Show.
It's a selection. So there's about 3,500 wines entered in, did under 3,500 wines entered.
Just as well, we're not tasting them all then.
Yeah, exactly. It makes for a very big day. And there's about 20 trophies and top golds that are awarded at a dinner the evening before, the Thursday night. So then on Friday, what we do is, yes, as you say, host a lunch. And there's about a dozen of the trophy winning wines from this year's show that match to lunch during the day. And then also we're hoping this year we're going to do a comparative tasting, probably of the Pinot Noir class, where we'll be looking at Pinot Noirs that have won gold medals at each of the Capital City wine shows.
Oh, nice. I'm very fond of a glass of Pinot Noir.
Oh, they're lovely, and particularly the Victorians do know how to do them very well.
And we also celebrate the coveted Jimmy Watson Trophy.
We do, and that's, you know, obviously the Jimmy Watson celebrated its 50th anniversary last year. And we will have this year's Jimmy Watson winner, all things being equal, unless they're overseas or something. We usually manage to get our hands on them and convince them to be in Melbourne without telling them why. and they're usually sitting there like a rabbit caught in headlights because, you know, obviously the Jimmy Watson Trophy still changes things for businesses and helps them sell out their wine. So we usually would definitely have the Jimmy Watson winning wine to taste to have a glass of at lunch, and hopefully the person that's responsible for making it as well.
And it does give them a nice sticker to put on the bottle as well, doesn't it?
Well, it gives them a very nice sticker to put on the bottle if they choose. But these days, they tend to sell it all out before they even have to worry about that.
I'm sort of trying to remember back to last year, and there's moments of it that are a bit foggy, because it was one of those days. I don't even remember where we ended up, Ange, and I'm sure it was in a taxi on the way home, having enjoyed everything in moderation. It's a great lunch, and those people that are interested in wine that are members of the general public can in fact get in touch with the WCA and go to this lunch.
They can, absolutely. And, I mean, the Melbourne Wine Show has been going for, you know, well over 100 years. And I suppose it's always been a bit of a closed shop in terms of exhibitors and people in the wine industry being able to participate in the celebrations. But this lunch, although, you know, there are a lot of industry there, it's a great opportunity if you love your wine to come and rub shoulders with some winemakers and taste some amazing wines and have some great food. So, yeah, we're really open to anybody who has a love of great wine to come along on the day.
Or even a bit of a remote interest, because the only way that we become more knowledgeable about wine is to drink it.
That's right, and it's an incredibly fun day. There's no long, boring speeches. I tend to MC the lunch and whip through it because I want to sit down and enjoy the wines and eat the food myself as well.
Indeed you do. Look, it's always good fun. So if people want to know more, and they can get in touch with you at Wine Communicators Australia, WCA, the website
is just winecommunicators.com.au.
And there's a tab on there that talks about the Royal Melbourne Wine Show Luncheon.
If they click on the events tab, that will take them straight to the page where the Melbourne Wine Show lunch is featured, and they can buy tickets online.
They can, and it's on Friday the 26th of October. I'd suggest probably taking the afternoon off.
Oh, yes, there's no plans to be going back to work. This year there's very fine folk down at the Woolshed, because the event is at Docklands, and the guys at the Woolshed have made a special area of the bar available for us. So, yes, as you say, we will be drinking
post-event.
We'll be drinking responsibly post-event at the Woolshed.
Because last year we went down to Jimmy Watson's restaurant, didn't we?
Well, we did, and of course there's still always a bit of an industry event down there at the Watsons as well, but you know what it's like getting across Melbourne on a Friday afternoon.
Trying to get a taxi, can't get one for love or money.
So for those who are prepared to make the slog to Carlton, I think I ended up walking halfway there
in a lovely pair of heels, yes.
Yes, exactly.
All right, well, people can jump onto the website to winecommunicators.com.au. They can hit on the events tab and find the Royal Melbourne Wine Show, and we do encourage people to get along for no other reason but this organisation is a non-profit based organisation. It's just all about educating people about wine.
That's absolutely right.
Angie Bradbury, always good to talk to you.
Thank you, Pete.
I'll have to go and get your second coffee now.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks, bye, Angie.
Bye, Perry. Bye.
She's a good egg. Angie also heads up Dig Marketing, which is a food and beverage marketing company that's been around for some years, and she's a jolly good bird. I do care for her quite a bit. We're going to have another little song. I've just decided we're going to have a little more Scissor Sisters for no particular reason, but I'm loving this new album. This track is called Keep Your Shoes, and I'm sure you shall enjoy it, as I will, here on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
One of the funnest songs from one of the funnest albums going around at the minute. That is the Scissor Sisters with Keep Your Shoes On. I love it. I do suggest that you get hold of that album because it is a cracker. We're going to have some messages and we shall return very shortly with to say goodbye. I hate saying goodbye every Saturday, but, you know, it's got to happen. Boy's got to have a life. Back shortly.
Joy 94.9.
Yes, do support our wonderful Joy sponsors. It is 3 minutes to two, and we have to say farewell very shortly to the very fabulous Perry Shagan, who's been very kind to come in and spend the hour with me talking about all sorts of things, really. And we have kept on track. I just want to talk quickly before we go about some of your signature dishes and how they came about, in particular this five-spiced quail terrine foie gras parfait. It seems it's a very long title. Talk me through it.
It's inspired by the terrines that we used to do at Circa, and so it's very French technique driven. But what I like to do is I like to, and I spoke about it earlier on, is I like to throw a few Asian ingredients in there. Mm-hmm. So I flavour it with a lot of five spice and star anise. And
so the five spices are,
oh, I can never remember them, to be honest.
There's one pepper.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's five spices in it.
Can't
you can go and actually buy it in your Asian grocery.
The amount of times that I've actually brought this up, this conversation up, and we kind of go through Google and we're like, oh, yep, here it is. And then it just wipes completely from my memory bank.
Keep going there and telling me what else you're going to do to this.
And then I use a bit of ketchup manis, which is a sweet soy. Marinate the farce. Yeah, yep. And then you've got the foie gras in there, which will make it a very nice, smooth, creamy texture, and then you've got the flavour of the anise and all the spices. So it's quite, yeah.
Yum.
It's different, but it's delicious.
Are you ready?
Yes.
The most common is star anise, cloves, cinnamon, Szechuan pepper, and ground fennel.
There you go.
There you go. That is allegedly what is Chinese five spice.
Ask me that again next week and I won't be able to recite it.
I'll probably get one or two. That's about the best I can do.
Yeah.
And then as you talked about earlier, there's some nice French influences in there. The rolled saddle of rabbit, braised leg, kohlrabi cream, and a raspberry Madeira dressing. It sounds fancy, but it's actually quite simple food, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I mean, and that's what I sort of set out with this menu at the Graham. I set out to set out a menu that you could come for dinner every night, and it's not a special occasion sort of place. And you know, like with the spring degustation at the moment, there's some pretty tricked up sort of food, but it's also very simple and approachable, and you know, there's a few little techniques thrown in there.
Very good. The website for the Graham.
Yes, the Graham Hotel.
.com.au. Beautiful. Perry, thank you for joining me. We have to run. It is exactly 2 o'clock. I'll be back next week. Keep yourself nice. This is Cravings on Joy 94.9. Goodbye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.